stars, 5 stars? How would you rate life right about now? From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, today is Tuesday, May 18th, and this is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we welcome author John Green. We'll talk about his latest book, The Anthropocene Reviewed, from South Dakota sunsets to scratch and sniff stickers. We'll explore the humor and heartache of being human during difficult times. Then, remember that Biden administration map of proposed electric vehicle charging stations that left South Dakota empty of new infrastructure? The map, by design, didn't include what we already have. We asked the people of Custer, South Dakota, what the nation can learn about electric cars and public-private partnerships. Plus, the sun shines in a new exhibit at the South Dakota Art Museum. That's coming later in the hour. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first.
With SDPB News, I'm John Wynn. A South Dakota nonprofit official says food insecurity will continue after the pandemic. Matt Gasson is the CEO of Feeding South Dakota. He recently spoke to the Sioux Falls Downtown Rotary Club.
The numbers that we talk about back in March a year ago to where we are today, to what is that going to look like in the future, I can tell you experience tells me that we're going to be dealing with a significant increase in the number of people seeking food assistance far beyond the pandemic. The economic impact that this pandemic had on the lives of families is going to go long beyond the pandemic itself.
Feeding South Dakota changed its operations during the pandemic. The nonprofit closed fixed food pantries to focus on mobile food distribution. The organization now serves up to 20,000 households per month at distribution events in more than 120 communities. There's another option for getting around downtown Sioux Falls. Besides ride-hailing services like Uber and Lyft, environmentally friendly pedicabs will soon hit the streets. Pedicabs, sometimes called cycle rickshaws or bike taxis, are three-wheeled vehicles that have seating in the back and a driver in front who will pedal to your destination. Emmett Reistroffer is the founder of the new Sioux Falls Pedicabs. He says he became acquainted with the vehicles when he lived in Denver, Colorado. The business will start with 2 pedicabs, then Reistroffer hopes to have up to 4 or 5 cycling the streets by next month. Police say they have made an arrest in the death of a man who was run over by a vehicle in Rapid City. Authorities say that after investigators spoke with witnesses and reviewed surveillance video, police determined that the driver, the victim, and another individual were drinking alcohol in the vehicle while it was parked along a street. At one point, the victim, 47-year-old Paul Walking of Pine Ridge, got out of the car and walked around to the rear of the vehicle. According to officials, the driver put the car in reverse and backed over the victim. For weather today, we're seeing partly to mostly sunny skies in the west and northeast. In the southeast, cloudy skies with a slight chance of sprinkles later this afternoon. Today's highs are expected in the lower 70s east and south to the lower 80s in the northwest. That will cool down to lows in the 50s later this evening. That's also going along with mostly clear skies west, with clouds enveloping most of the east. On Wednesday, mostly sunny skies west, partly sunny in the northeast, and mostly cloudy southeast, with a chance of showers and thunderstorms throughout the state beginning in the afternoon. Those chances of showers and storms could continue over the night. Tomorrow's highs are expected in the lower 70s west to the lower 80s in the northeast. Expected lows to reach the lower 50s to the lower 60s. On Thursday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms continue again in the afternoon for most parts of the state. Sunny skies west, partly sunny northeast, mostly cloudy southeast. Thursday's highs are in the upper 70s to lower 80s. We'll see partly to mostly cloudy skies Thursday night. Later on Thursday, partly to mostly cloudy skies statewide with lows in the upper 40s northwest to the lower 60s in the east. Wrapping up the end of the work week on Friday, partly to mostly sunny skies across the state with a slight chance of showers in the west and possible thunderstorms. For SDPB News, I'm John Wynn.
And I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakotans remain politically polarized in their support of elected political leaders, but new polling numbers from the SDSU poll reveal the nuances of that support. Dr. David Wiltsy is an associate professor of political science in the School of American and Global Studies at South Dakota State University. He's director of the SDSU poll, and he joins us now with the latest. Dr. Wiltsy, welcome back to In the Moment.
Thanks for having me.
Explain to our listeners, what are feeling thermometers? What are they measuring?
Well, a feeling thermometer is a pretty intuitive measurement where we ask our respondents to rate a person, a place, anything really, on a 0 to 100 scale. So 0 meaning the most cool feelings, 100 the warmest feelings, and 50 would be a nice and neutral rating.
So there's some overall findings here, and then as you break them down by party, it gets even more interesting. But tell us the overall findings, the big picture first, please.
Well, the big picture, whenever you do these overall ratings with thermometers, it's going to look rather middling, and it's going to look a lot like election results in many ways. So when it comes to the feeling thermometers for current office holders in South Dakota, almost all of our statewide elected officials hold a rating somewhere between 45 and 52. And Dusty Johnson is the most popular of the bunch here. And President Biden, he has a rating somewhere around 35. So about what you'd expect overall in a state like South Dakota.
And then we look closer at the findings by party, we see a different picture. And then let's talk a little bit about how the feelings have changed. So when you look at political party, Republicans, Democrats first, what do you see more closely?
With the Democrats, obviously you've got warm feelings towards President Biden, very strong, up almost to 80 or so. And then Republicans do, as you'd expect, fairly poorly. Again, Dusty Johnson does pretty well amongst Democrats. He has quite a lot of bipartisan support, and things just go down between Senator Thune, Rounds, then Governor Noem, and former President Trump. And there is quite a difference between the bottom here and the top in terms of ratings for Republicans. Governor Noem, former President Trump, they pull right around 10 or below, where the others are in the 20s and 30s.
How are things changing since the last time the electorate was surveyed through the SDSU poll?
It looks like our congressional delegation is not faring very well relative to Governor Noem and President Trump. Republicans in South Dakota still very much see President Trump and Governor Noem as kind of the standard bearers of the party. They've taken the very strong support for the rhetoric that we see coming out of the 2020 election. Whereas the congressional delegation has been a lot cooler in that kind of support and not really showing that kind of those kinds of opinions and attitudes towards the 2020 election, the fraud and all that that President Trump alleges and that Governor Noem has been rather vocal in support of.
So let's talk about I want to just get this in about Congressman Dusty Johnson, because he's still doing very well with the Republicans in the state of South Dakota. He's at 33 for sort of a bipartisan support, and among independents, he is a 51, which seems relatively high for me. So often we hear about how popular Governor Noem is and her presidential aspirations potentially. But here is Congressman Johnson sitting at amongst independents and to a certain extent Democrats, but also with Republicans, with these pretty high numbers. What do you make of that?
Well, Dusty Johnson has always tried to kind of set himself apart from a lot of the petty partisanship that you see in Washington, D.C., and has always kind of tried to be someone who makes a concerted effort to reach across the aisle, and that really is paying off. But the downside of that for him is that he's not doing as well amongst Republicans as the governor or the former president are. So there is, there is a backside to that kind of reach that we see by Representative Johnson. And when it comes to, the popularity of the governor, I mean, that really is focused in the Republican Party. You get out of the Republican Party, and she just doesn't have the same kind of traction that the other officials do. So she has been very focused on the base of the party, really trying to grasp on to the supporters of former President Trump to really lift herself within the party. And after all, that's what really matters when it comes right down to it, is how you stand within your party. In our our polarized environment, the elections that matter most, and in fact, in South Dakota, the only election that matters is the primary. So how well you do in the primary really is what these folks focus on for the most part.
So great for governor. If she does have political aspirations for a nationwide office, can you extrapolate anything from this data to say she'd have a tougher go of it with the nation because of, of how she is laying the foundation right now or not? What do you think?
Yeah, certainly in the general election, the way that she's positioning herself, very close to Donald Trump and his core supporters, that will make it a little bit more difficult for her to move into a general election should she take the nomination. But in she's making a classic move in terms of really focusing on the primary voters and the caucus voters that's necessary for that nomination to take shape. And right now, the core of the Republican Party really is a core of Trump supporters.
Dr. David Wiltsie is Associate Professor of Political Science in the School of American and Global Studies at SDSU. He's Director of the SDSU poll. We've been talking about this poll up close and personal for a while now. We'll continue to bring you updates. Meanwhile, you can find links to the press releases on our website at sdpb.org/news. Dave, thanks so much. We'll see you next time.
Thanks a lot.
After the break, we look at unemployment and Governor Kristi Noem's desire to end the supplement from the federal government and get people back to work. You're on listener-supported SDPB Radio.
It's the early 1930s in Kansas City's Sunset Club. The band starts a tune, and after a chorus, the bartender begins singing the blues as he works his way to the stage. After a few numbers, he walks back to the bar and continues pouring drinks for customers. Jump ahead 2 decades later, and a singing bartender, Big Joe Turner, is an improbable rock and roll star. I'm Carl Gerke. Turner was born 110 years ago today, and this evening on Jazz Nightly, we'll hear a few of his classic recordings. You can join me at 8 Central, 7 Mountain.
Program funding by a co-op agreement with the U.S. Small Business Administration. If COVID-19 impacted your business, SDCEO Women's Business Center offers complimentary confidential advice. More at bhsu.edu/SDCEO.
Song of the Soldier for a Day of Remembrance. I'm Scott Simon. Please join me here for Alan Seeger, Instrument of Destiny.
Listen Memorial Day evening at 8 Central, 7 Mountain on SDPB.
Program funding by ReliaBank. Personal and business banking solutions, reliable services, and a friendly welcome at 9 locations across eastern South Dakota. ReliaBank, a brighter banking experience since 1920. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota is one of a number of states that plans to eliminate federal unemployment benefits by the end of June. Some state leaders say the enhanced benefits keep people from taking jobs. That's even led one state lawmaker to propose cutting the state's unemployment office. SDPB's Lee Strubinger has more.
At the beginning of the pandemic, Monument Health stopped all elective surgeries. That led to furloughs across the health system. Trina Allen is the Vice President of Human Resources at Monument Health.
I quite honestly am thankful for the federal funds so that our caregivers could remain whole while they were off work. And the good news is almost all of them were able to return to work after we resumed elective surgeries.
But now, Allen says Monument is having trouble filling its open positions.
There's just not a lot of workforce for all of our jobs. I have lots of thoughts on why that might happen, but the fact is it's just hard to find enough workers.
The Black Hills Health System is headquartered in Rapid City. It employs over 5,000 people. The South Dakota Works website shows Monument Health has about 324 open jobs, from Custer to Spearfish. Allen says that's typical for an organization its size. The state website seeks to pair those looking for work with jobs across a range of positions and industries. At a recent event at Mount Rushmore National Memorial, Governor Kristi Noem announced a new initiative that seeks to pair those looking for work in the tourism industry with jobs in South Dakota.
That's really what we're doing differently this year, is not just working on recruiting visitors, but recruiting those people who want to work in the tourism industry and facilitate apprenticeships, training programs, so that we can fill those open positions that we have.
However, help wanted signs persist across the Black Hills and the entire state. As a result, Governor Noem says the state will stop offering expanded federal unemployment benefits. 18 other Republican-controlled states are taking the same approach. But some say the state should go even further.
We're paying these unemployment benefits out to people, and it's encouraging them not to seek work. And, you know, that's, we shouldn't be doing that. We got to quit paying people not to work.
That's State Representative Tim Goodwin. He'll offer a measure to close the state's unemployment office next session. It's a proposal with varying levels of support. Goodwin calls unemployment a relic of the past.
You know, I guess we can look back and say there was a time and place for it. But like I said, the times have changed. Now everybody desperately needs workers.
Goodwin, a Republican, says the private sector can figure out the unemployment issue better than the government. Last April, when the pandemic began, there were 8,000 new unemployment claims in 1 week. There were five consecutive weeks with 5,000 or more unemployment claims. 1 year ago, there were more than 25,000 people on unemployment in South Dakota. The federal government stepped in, offering enhanced unemployment compensation beyond the traditional 26 weeks given by the state. It also issues additional $300 weekly payments to those on unemployment. Marsha Holtman is the secretary of the South Dakota Department of Labor and Regulation. She says the state has a workforce issue. Even if everyone currently on unemployment got a job, there would still be more jobs than there are people to fill them.
We have about 23,000 open jobs, which is a record high. So a huge number of job openings.
There are currently about 2,500 South Dakotans receiving unemployment benefits. Holtman says there are about 10,000 people in the state who are not looking for work right now. Even if all those people, 12,500 of them, got a job tomorrow, the state would still have more than 10,000 jobs to fill, which means employers have to compete for those interested in working.
We train people to do all sorts of work.
Trina Allen with Monument Health says they have openings in a number of departments.
If people think, well, gosh, I can't work at the hospital because I'm not a doctor or a nurse, I want them to know we have lots of jobs available.
Some of those jobs include sign-on bonuses, especially for nurses. Some say the hospitality industry is also starting to advertise higher wages as businesses compete in a tight labor market. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City.
You can find all our news stories on our website, sdpb.org/news. Up next, I'm going to give this next segment 4.5 stars. It would have been 5 if we had been able to invite him here in person. John Green is ahead. You're on listener-supported SDPB Radio.
The QAnon conspiracy theory is bizarre, confusing, and dark, but it's not original. What was your first reaction to hearing about QAnon?
Here we go again.
Really?
Yeah, it was.
Right out of the gate, huh?
Right out of the gate.
I'm Ari Shapiro. We revisit the satanic panic of the 1980s to see what it can tell us about QAnon today, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen beginning at 3 Central, 2 Mountain on SDPB.
Program funding by the South Dakota Humanities Council, promoting reading for all ages with a 2021 Young Readers One book, Imagine Imahina, by Juan Felipe Herrera, featuring English and Spanish text. More at sdhumanities.org.
Hi, it's Julie Rose, host of Top of Mind. Memorial Day marks the traditional beginning of summer. It's also a time to revere sacrifices made by others so that we can enjoy our freedoms. My team has put together a special hour featuring conversations about legacies and memorials. We'll learn about projects to collect soldiers' letters and to preserve veterans' memories. I hope you'll join us.
Listen Memorial Day at noon Central, 11 Mountain, and 7 Central, 6 Mountain, here on SDPB.
Program funding is provided by Gene Hufford of American Family Insurance on Jackson Boulevard in Rapid City. Gene and his team of experienced insurance advisors will insure your home with your specific needs and budget in mind. GeneHufford.com.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. Well, I'm pretty excited about this next story because it is not every day you get to interview one of your favorite authors of all time. John Green is a number one best-selling author, and many people credit him with revolutionizing young adult literature, at least young adult lit that doesn't include wizards and witches, and online video content. He's written books like The Fault in Our Stars and Turtles All the Way Down. He's created or co-created groundbreaking digital content like The Crash Course and Vlogbrothers. Those are with his brother, Hank Green. Well, now he has a new book. It's released today. It's called The Anthropocene Reviewed. Maybe you've already heard the podcast the book is inspired by. If not, here is a little context. The Anthropocene is the current geologic age. And a review, well, that's the thing we think we could all do these days, where we mark a moment in time by commenting and rating a place or experience, like 5 stars or 1 star. But when we do that, we're also saying, I was here. This is what I saw. This is who I was with. And this is what I experienced. Combine those together with the thoroughly original mind of John Green, and you get a memoir told in a series of essays or reviews about everything from scratch and sniff stickers to the wintry mix offering known officially as Grapple. Woven into those essays, which are often humorous to help you bear their heartbreak, is the story of a writer telling his own story for the first time in public. I spoke with John Green last week. John Green, thanks for making time for welcome back to South Dakota, I should say, because you have been here before.
I've been there several times. I was last in Sioux Falls in 2017 when my book Turtles All the Way Down came out, and it's nice to be there virtually, if not in person.
Yeah, and people were in a frenzy online trying to find where you were at, and Hank was with you, your brother Hank, right?
Yeah, he was.
So you enjoyed your time here? You liked the city and the state?
Oh, it was beautiful. Yeah, we had a great time, and I went on a beautiful run on a bike trail as the sun rose. One of my favorite memories of that tour.
Nice. Well, we'll welcome you back when traveling is a little more conducive to travel.
But yeah.
You're going on a virtual book tour for this book. Tell us a little bit about the virtual tour. Before we do that, what beautiful book design.
I know.
Right? Including this lovely sort of front matter with the autograph page and the review of autographs.
Yeah, the end papers are actually taken from one of the obsessive drawings that I make. I make these drawings where I draw like tens of thousands of circles. And so, yeah, my publisher very generously took those drawings and turned them into end papers. But the design of the book in general is just amazing. Like, I've kind of waited my whole life to have a book this beautiful, and I just feel really, really lucky. So grateful to Grace Hahn, who designed the cover, and everybody else who worked on it. Authors have to get super lucky with that stuff. So,
yeah. And readers are just, I mean, I know when I'm pretty rough on my books, you know, I mark them and I dog ear them and I highlight them. And I'm not saying I won't do that to this book, but it was so beautiful when it came and it felt so special to me that it felt like, no, I can't do that with this piece of art, not only because of the words inside, but because of the design.
Oh, thanks. Yeah.
Readers need this right now. They need something like this after the year that we've had, don't you think?
Yeah, that was my hope. You know, I really wrote it partly for myself after the year that I'd had. You know, I wanted to write a book about connection and about hope and about my belief that despite the reality of suffering and of loss, that hope is the right response to consciousness. And I needed to write that for myself, honestly, as much as anyone else. And I really wanted to write about the way that connection, human connection to other people, even in this time of isolation, has helped pull me through, and how much I need that to get through what we have to get through, what each of us has to get through.
And it's funny in all the right places.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to talk about the book because it is quite serious and quite personal and emotional, but I did want it to be really funny too. I mean, like, you can't write like about Diet Dr. Pepper without being a little funny. If you take Diet Dr. Pepper too seriously, people aren't going to love it. So yeah, it was a lot of fun to work on the book too. I mean, this is the first time I've written something that isn't fiction, and it was also the most fun I've had writing, maybe ever, certainly in a very long time. It just felt, it just felt really joyful.
Yeah. The experience, you mentioned Turtles All the Way Down, which came out in 2017. And I went back and listened to some of the interviews that people asked you, that some of the questions they asked were pretty cringy, to be honest. I don't know if you felt that way, but I felt that way watching it. And what was the experience of really being on the book tour circuit and doing interviews like this one? Hopefully I'll do a little bit better than some of those in inspiring you to write from John Green's perspective and to go, now it's time for essays and nonfiction.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right. It was hard. It was hard to be, asked questions as if I were the protagonist of the novel. It was hard to be asked questions as if it was a work of nonfiction. You know, and I had invited some of those questions because I have a public life as a mentally ill person, and that's important to me. I don't want to be embarrassed or ashamed of the fact that I live with chronic mental illness. But it was hard to try to sort through how to answer those questions in the context of fiction, how to talk about myself in the context of fiction. One thing I've always liked about writing fiction is that it's written in code and nobody else knows the code. And even when people think they know the code, I kind of know they don't. But I didn't want to write in code anymore. I just didn't want to. I wanted to write about how I do see the world, and I wanted to write about my own experiences and the places where my life touches these big historical forces. And in some ways, I'm really glad that I made the transition when I did, because then in March of 2020, this huge historical force showed up, and it was very difficult for me to write about anything else. And I didn't want to write about it in code. I wanted to write about it directly and earnestly. Like, I want the book to be really funny, but I also wanted it to be earnest and honest and a reflection of how I feel about the world.
Yeah. For folks who haven't read it yet, I want to just take one essay in the book as an example for what we're talking about, how, you know, what is the premise and how this sort of unfolds. And let's talk scratch and sniff stickers.
Great.
Because for a couple of reasons, and one is there's so much in, I don't know, 800 words. I'm not sure how long these essays are, but they're fairly short. And, you know, we've got a quote from Helen Keller. We've got micro encapsulation. We've got Chanel number 5. We've got a really emotional, powerful story of bullying folded into, and then we have these scratch and sniff stickers that so many of us remember from our childhood.
Yeah.
From a process level, how do you come and start weaving all those things together? Can you give us a behind the scenes?
Sure. So when I was writing about scratch and sniff stickers, my first thought was, I want to write about smell and this radical specificity that smell has, and how when we create virtual experiences, you know, I can put on a virtual reality headset and feel like I'm inside of a boxing ring, but there's no real virtual reality for scent, because it's so hyper specific. And then I was thinking about how when I was a kid, I had these scratch and sniff stickers, and I would use them as a way of like comforting and calming myself way after everyone else had stopped collecting scratch and sniff stickers. So I was, you know, pretty badly bullied when I was in middle school, and it was really really tough, really scary. Every day at school was really hard. And I would come home and I would scratch these scratch and sniff stickers and I would feel like I was 8 years old again and I would feel safe. And smell can be such a powerful force in our emotional lives. And so I wanted to write about that. But then also, like, the chemistry behind scratch and sniff stickers turns out to be really interesting and kind of important to human history, because right. it's the same basic concept that allows for time-released medication, which has, in many cases, completely transformed the way that we treat certain illnesses, including, by the way that my mental illness is treated. And so here was this weird full circle moment of this process of microencapsulation that makes scratch and sniff stickers possible, that was so important to my childhood, also turns out to be pretty important to my adulthood in a completely different way. And so that's, I was thinking about all that. And then as I learned stuff, I tried to kind of layer in the personal sides of it, you know, because I do want to, I want to write about myself and my own personal relationship with scratch and sniff stickers alongside the kind of bigger story of them.
Yeah. And even bringing back the smell of a Hawaiian orchid that we don't know, the extinct smells that we don't even know for sure if we've gotten it right through the process of science today. Fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really fascinated by the ways that we're trying to reconstitute smells that are gone now, and the way that smell changes over time. So, like, one of the reasons that when I imagine the smell of rain, I imagine it as quite acidic. And one of the reasons I imagine it that way is because the rain in my childhood in Florida actually was more acidic than the rain today in Indianapolis because of different chemicals going into the atmosphere. And that is also mind-blowing. Like, we make this, you know, bright distinction between the natural world and the human artificial world. But in fact, like, these worlds are interacting with each other in profound ways all the time. And that's another thing I wanted to kind of be a thread that went throughout the book.
Yeah. And then when I was pulling out my tiny little copy of paper towels, because I love these.
These are great. Yeah, I love those.
They're fabulous. And I think you refer to rain in the first chapter as a city.
I do, yeah.
In Florida. And so then you can see just how a writer transforms and uses these memories in different ways, which was also really fascinating as we follow your work throughout the years. For people who read Turtles All the Way Down, 2017, let's say they were 15 when they read it, they would have graduated during the pandemic. If they were 17 when they read it, they would have graduated college during the pandemic. You and I didn't have the same, we didn't have a John Green when we were, the young adult literature has, you've really transformed that in a lot of ways. It's not like we didn't have books that were targeted for our age, but I think a lot of people would agree that that you revolutionized that as a young adult author. Do you think about how the books that that generation of readers came across and then had for these formative periods of their life will always be, in, you know, the comfort book for some of these people during the pandemic was to go back to An Abundance of Catherines or whatever they first read to make themselves feel safe during a pandemic. Do you think about things like that and your relationship with your readers?
Yeah, I mean, first I do want to say that I don't think that I as an individual did much to change YA literature. I really think that these are big collaborations. There are so many great YA writers, and I'm hesitant to take that credit, although I appreciate the sentiment. But I do think about it, and it is a real gift to have a seat at the table in a young person's life, because it is such an intense and often difficult time. It's the first time for a lot of people that they're falling in love, that they're grappling with grief, that they're asking big questions about meaning and about suffering and about justice. And so having a place in those conversations through my stories is a real honor to me. And I know that the books that I read when I was a teenager that, you know, like you said, that brought me comfort, that made me feel less alone, those books are still really important to me. And in a lot of ways, I've moved on from them, but they still inform the way I think about the world. And so, yeah, it does. It means a lot to me. It's kind of overwhelming, actually, to try to make sense of it. there's no, one of the weird things about the relationship between writer and reader is that there's no way for me to say thanks properly. You know, like I signed 250,000 copies of this book because I was trying to find some way of saying thanks, trying to find some way of like trying to get my head around even like having a print run of that size. And I just, in the end, like my only conclusion is that I don't know that there is a way. I don't know that there's a way that I can say thank you as a reader to the writers who've made a huge difference in my life either. I think that instead we just have to, I guess I have to try to internalize the gratitude that I feel to readers and try to live that out in my life somehow.
Yeah. Back to scratch and stiff stickers. And the question I want to ask you is on your virtual book tour, there's something about sort of helping people, you know, figure out how to do a review of their own. Because again, for people who don't know, the Anthropocene Reviewed is based on this concept of a number of stars in a review that really we use to say, I was here, that they're memoirs in some ways. And that this is part of that. One of the things that I thought when I read the Scratch and Sniff chapter was when I had these stickers when I was a little girl, someone told me not to use them up.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was so afraid to smell the smell that I was almost nervous that I was going to mess up the concept of the scratch and sniff sticker. And I thought, what have I lost out in my life? Because I was afraid because I had this mentality of scarcity, right?
Right.
So my question to you is, how do you invite other people into looking at their experiences once they read something and then creating some kind of, you know, whether it's a review or a journaling prompt or a writing prompt of their own, because you're inviting people into that space too.
For sure. And thank you so much for sharing that with me. I mean, for me, like the best part about writing is when a reader is generous enough to commingle their memories and their fears and their hopes and their experiences with yours as a writer. Like that's the miracle of reading for me, is when I don't know someone and they don't know me, and yet somehow we are able to connect in places that we can't connect with anyone else because they may be secrets that we can't share. And that is what I love about reading, and that is what I love most about writing. So I really appreciate that you like were able to bring some of your own memories to that essay. As far as like how I do them, I do want to, in the book tour, unfortunately virtual book tour that we're doing, I do want to try to model how I write reviews and also invite other people to do them. I mean, we're all reviewers now, right? Like through Yelp and Amazon, everyone is a reviewer, and every review is a memoir. Like my 2-star review of going to this restaurant is as much about my vibe walking in as it is about whatever the restaurant was. When I'm writing these reviews, I often try to begin by thinking about what do I use all the time and never think about? What was really important to me once that I never think about anymore? That's how I got to scratch and sniff stickers. That's also how I got to Haley's Comet. And then I try also as a sort of game that I play with myself, I guess. I try to play a game called Never Seen, Never Will that I learned from an artist named David Brooks, where I try to think of something that I know about that I have never seen and never will see, like the surface of Mars, or like this extinct Hawaiian bird, the Kauai O'o. And then I try to write an essay about that.
John Green's latest book is called The Anthropocene Reviewed. You can see and share our video interview online at sdpb.org/news. It's on today's In the Moment episode page. The book is released today. We recorded with John Green last week. The calendar is starting to populate with more live music dates around the state. Thursday, catch some galactic bluegrass from Buffalo Galaxy when they perform at Lost Cabin Brewing Company in Rapid City. There's no cover, and that music gets underway at 6 p.m. On Saturday, see a couple of our past Moment in Sound guests at the 44 North Whiskey and Seltzer Bar. That's in Sturgis. Chris Huizenga and Devin Sands take the stage. Music starts at 7. Nice days are ahead. Up until Friday, there's a chance of light rain on Friday in the Black Hills, and temperatures will drop into the 60s on Saturday under cloudy skies. The Spring Fling 5K and 10K Disc Golf Tournaments Friday through Sunday at the Richmond Lake Disc Golf Course. That's northwest of Aberdeen. For that day, you can expect highs in the 80s all 3 days of the tournament. You'll have a chance of rain showers on Sunday. And it is opening day for the Sioux Falls Canaries of the American Association of Professional Baseball. The Canaries are home all the way through May 27th, and they open with a three-game series against the Winnipeg Gold Eyes this weekend. They host the Kane County Cougars. The Canaries play their home games at Sioux Falls Stadium, so keep an eye on the weather that day because there is a chance of rain in the southeast all the way through Sunday. And Friday begins South Dakota's open house and free fishing weekend. Look for free entrance into all South Dakota state parks and recreation areas. No fishing licenses required, though those regulations and limits still apply. The open house and free fishing weekend goes through Sunday. You can select from many more events on our website, sdpb.org/calendar. Go forth and enjoy the state. Ahead on In the Moment, one community has taken electric car infrastructure into their own hands. We talk Tesla and Custer up next. You're In the Moment on listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. On their new album, the Black Keys pay tribute to musicians who helped shape them. Delta blues greats Junior Kimbrough and R.L. Burnside.
Literally, the band wouldn't exist if it weren't for these guys, and we kind of were due to pay a proper homage to these dudes.
The Black Keys, next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon, beginning at 1 Central, Noon Mountain, on SDPB Radio.
Program funding by First Dakota National Bank. Every timeless institution, tradition, and thriving business was started somewhere by someone who had a dream. Here's to those who made it happen first. FirstDakota.com/first.
On the next Fresh Air, Seth Rogen talks about his new memoir, which he describes as being about his grandparents, bar mitzvahs, Jewish summer camp, and more stories about doing drugs than his mother would like. He says things about other famous people he's sure will create an awkward conversation at a party one day. Join us.
This afternoon at 2, One Mountain on SDPB.
Program funding is provided by Sanford Underground Research Facility, hosting world-leading research in physics and other disciplines. Learn more about America's Underground Science Laboratory at sanfordlab.org.
Business and Community Development reporting on SDPB is supported by SDN Communications. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. The Biden administration has proposed a $2 trillion infrastructure plan that includes a national electronic vehicle charging system. Sharp-eyed South Dakotans immediately noticed the map for the potential infrastructure of electric cars didn't include any stations in South Dakota. But that doesn't mean the state isn't a magnet for electric vehicles and their drivers. In fact, one South Dakota community has been on the forefront of this kind of public-private partnership for 7 years. Dulcie Davenport is executive director of the Custer Chamber of Commerce and joins us now for a look at the Sound of Silence Tesla Rally. Dulcie, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Yes, thank you for having me today.
So this rally is coming up Friday through Sunday, the 21st to the 23rd of May. Tell us a little bit about the rally itself in its current state, and then we'll go back to how the idea began. But what is it like this weekend?
Sure. So as of yesterday, as of last night when I checked, we had 89 Teslas that are already registered, which is the record. In 2019, the last year that we had this event, we had 60. And so we're well up from even, you know, the last time we did this event. So we're really excited to have, we're hoping, close to 100 Teslas here this weekend. They come in on Friday night, get checked in with us at the chamber. They'll have a little car show out in our parking lot where they all kind of get together and show off their cars and chat with each other. We'll do a mixer on Friday night as well, and that is open to not just the Tesla owners, but also anybody local that wants to come in and chat with the Tesla owners and all kind of get together and have a little mixer that night. They will do a Tesla talk where they talk about the start of the Tesla rally, there'll be a band on Friday night for everybody to attend. So just a lot of fun that first night. And then on Saturday, they take the opportunity to ride around the Black Hills. Some will go to the Badlands even, but they really like to take advantage of the free weekends in Custer State Park and drive through the roads there.
Yeah.
And then we do a group photo. So we're having to find a very large parking lot this year where we can get all, hopefully, 100 Teslas together for a big group photo. And then we finish off the night with a banquet dinner where they all get to, you know, talk Tesla and have a nice meal together. So that's kind of the gist of what we do.
So if you spend any time in Custer, you notice the charging stations. Tell me a little bit about how many charging stations you have and how they came to Custer, South Dakota.
Yes. So total, we have 30 charging stations. 22 of those are what we would call destination chargers. About half of them are just for Teslas, and then the other half are for any electric vehicles, including the Teslas. And then as of 2018, we now have 8 superchargers that are located behind Lynn's Dakota Mart. And we're one of the smaller towns that has such a large number of the superchargers, and it's mainly because of our Tesla Rally event that we have.
Tell me a little bit about, take us back, you know, 7 years or probably much longer than that, when the planning for this Sound of Silence Tesla Rally first began. What was the vision behind sort of a partnership with Tesla, because they have paid for the charging stations and the city of Custer and the visitor industry? What about that synergy of collaboration was appealing to the people of Custer?
Well, there's actually a really funny story that I have to tell you that started in 2011, and that kind of kicked off this whole thing. Back in 2011, you know, there weren't a lot of charging stations in the country just in general. Especially for Tesla, you had to get fully charged at every charging station along the way. Otherwise, you wouldn't make it to the next one. And in 2011, Elon Musk was coming out here with his family, I believe on vacation, and they were in Lusk, and it was kind of late one night, and I guess his kids were with him, and they were getting kind of antsy and rambunctious, and he just said, you know, forget it, we're getting back on the road, and didn't get fully charged in Lusk like he was supposed to. So he was not able to make it to Rapid City, where the next charging station was. He got stuck, stranded here in Custer, stayed at the Rocket Motel, and they helped him get connected to our previous chamber director, Dave, and Dave was able to get him over to, I believe, one of the campgrounds in town and get his Tesla charged up enough that he could make it to Rapid City the next day. So from all of that, he decided we need to have more charging stations in the area. And of course, you know, knowing this is a tourist area, he said, you know, that he wanted to get some charging stations here, and that's kind of how we got those first initial 22 charging stations here, was because of his mishap that landed him here in Custer that night.
And nice job to the person at the Rocket Motel who knew who Elon Musk was and figured out how to make that.
Yes, yes. And oddly enough, of course, you know, during the Tesla rally, the Rocket Motel is a very popular spot for Tesla owners to stay. And I think they fight over which hotel room Elon stayed in. They want to be in that room that Elon was in. So
nice.
But yeah, from there, you know, our previous director, Dave, you know, with that story, his brother-in-law, Rod, owned a Tesla at the time, was one of the, you know, original people to get a Tesla. And they just kind of decided, let's get, you know, people in the area that have Teslas together. Of course, the area extends well beyond the Black Hills, into Colorado and some of the surrounding states. And that first year, they had 10 Teslas that showed up. And, you know, now, you know, several years later, we're at 89.
Wow.
So it's grown a lot in that time. But because of the events and because it had become so popular and we were having so many Teslas here, you know, each year, that kind of got the attention of Tesla, and that's how we got those next 8 superchargers that got installed, which has been, you know, just a really nice addition to Custer. We love when we see, you know, Teslas charging there throughout the summer. It's just a nice thing to see that they're getting used, you know, all year long.
Right. So what can the rest of the nation learn from Custer, South Dakota, as everyone is talking about infrastructure and electric and trying to figure out who pays for that? You found this way to have this really innovative partnership, and it's continued to pay off for the city of Custer. What do you think the message is for other communities across the state or the nation?
You know, I think that, you know, we've seen that, you know, even before this, you know, big push for the electric vehicles, that a lot of people have them, and a lot of people have, you know, not just the Teslas, but any sort of electric vehicle. I think that if anybody can, you know, get the attention of Tesla, obviously that's a great way to do it. You know, it's awesome that they come in and pay for that. You know, it's millions of dollars worth at those superchargers. So it's just something that not a lot of communities could afford on their own. But when Tesla comes in and can pay for that, it's such a great addition. But, you know, even if there's partnerships with, you know, local electric companies or anything like that, you know, I think that there's some innovative ways that people find to bring those charging stations to their community. And that does, you know, allow electric vehicle owners to stop in that community, whether it's for lunch or to stay overnight, any shopping like that. It's just so nice to be able to have a spot for those people to charge up while they're here.
Dulcie Davenport is Executive Director for the Custer Chamber of Commerce. The Sound of Silence Tesla Rally is Friday through Sunday, May 21st through the 23rd in Custer, South Dakota. Dulcie, thank you so much. It was nice to get to know you a little bit.
Yes, thank you.
Paul Goebel was an author and an illustrator who specialized in books for children. Many of those books honored Native American tribes and people by sharing their stories. Goebel's book, The Girl Who Loved Wild Horses, won the most prestigious award for illustration in children's book, the Caldecott Medal. Now, a new exhibit at the South Dakota Art Museum in Brookings shares some of Paul Goebel's work, in which the sun makes a prominent appearance. Joining us today to talk about the significance of the exhibit, we have Jody Lundgren. She's coordinator of exhibitions at the South Dakota Art Museum. Jody, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Lori.
Tell us a little bit about this exhibition on Paul Goebel. What is it made up of?
Yeah. So this is one of our shows. We kind of have two approaches most of the time with Paul Goebel exhibits. One is where we'll show some illustrations from a single story. Mm-hmm. And this is one where we used a theme, of course, the sun with this one. And so we have, I think, 7 or 8 books that are illustrations from those books are featured, where they've got a really strong presence of the sun in them.
Yeah. What did the sun signify for Paul Goebel and for the people whose stories he was translating?
Yeah, you know, that can be. So, you know, we approach Paul Goebel's work in a lot of ways. They're amazing artworks. He has an incredible amount of skill, beautiful designs. But this can sometimes be the kind of cross-cultural translation we do, as a lot of folks nowadays see the sun through like a Western lens of science, whereas for Paul Goebel and for the, you know, the cultures of origin for these stories, the sun was really like a living spirit being, a character in and of itself. And so it, obviously it's, you know, so a source of life. It's the circular form will reference the kind of unity and harmony. And so in Paul Goebel's books, most of the time, if you see a sun, it is not just it happens to be a part of the landscape or the scene, but there's some sort of strong spiritual or symbolic potency to the presence of it in the scene. Mm. And so that's a real difference. You can come in, you can see the show and just appreciate how beautiful they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is a difference in how he handles the sun. Some of them that we have in the show are just a big red globe. Others use a war bonnet design where there's these paired isosceles triangles. And that has a very specific design connotation from Lakota, but other related tribes, Upper Plains tribes. So it'll vary from book to book or scene to scene what that sun or the presence of it might mean for that specific drawing or the book in general. And so what we do is we'll put the pieces up and then we'll put a little bit of the excerpt from the page of text that accompanied that image. But then the books are also available for people to read in the gallery too. So if you want to dig a little bit deeper, you could pull those books up, read them, see the role that the sun's playing in that story or that specific part of the story.
Yeah.
But it is, it's very layered in that sense. So you can appreciate it from a lot of different levels. But it was very important to Paul to, I think, honor the spiritual nature of the stories he was sharing, the deep truths and life lessons that are embedded in that kind of mythology, which he, you know, says is just exactly like biblical parables.
Mm.
They're they're an entertaining stories a lot of the time, but they're really there to teach you something more than that. So I love Paul Goebel's work because you can get both. These are children's books. They're easy to read with children, but the life lessons are really so impressive that, you know, you can reread them over and over again as an adult and still be reminded of those important things in life.
Yeah. One of the things I just love about this conversation and how you approach this exhibition or this show is, you know, all of us have had books, I shouldn't say all of us, but all of us who are lucky enough to have books put in our hands as a young child, whether that's in school, a library, or at home, there are also these objects of, depending on the book you have, objects of fine art that we give to our children.
Yeah.
And somehow we decide without often talking about it that art matters so much that we will put it in front of our kids as soon as humanly possible. And like I said, not every book has that, but so much of children's literature is rich with visual art that can go unnoticed when you put it up in a gallery and say, look at this, make the connection, think deeply about what the artist was doing. It becomes a revelation for how go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you finishing that. But,
no, just that.
What I love with Paul Goebel's works is that because he was the author and the illustrator, you know, sometimes that can be the kind of sign to somebody else, or the publisher can find an illustrator, and sometimes the author is a little bit more divorced from even those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But Paul, it's all interwoven. You know, the imagery, the scenes, the story, those kinds of deep truths that he experienced from those stories. You know, he would really only choose a story to create a children's book out of because he had heard it, read it in different forms, and it really meant something to him personally.
Yeah.
So these are, I think, you know, again, we say he's a children's book illustrator, but there's so much more meat to that, and especially in a figure like Paul, where it was, you know, his life was woven into it, his own spirituality was woven into it, and they're beautiful images. We love having the illustrations at the museum to show, you know, here's the book, here's how it looks when it's printed. But, you know, look really close at these beautiful paintings.
Yeah.
Because they can be appreciated from all of those perspectives.
I want to make sure I get this in for folks. The Radiant Sun Illustrations by Paul Goebel. It opened to the public at the South Dakota Art Museum last week. It's in Brookings, and you can view that display through October 24th. Other exhibits include All Done, the complete Harvey Dunn collection, and the South Dakota Governor's Biennial Art Exhibition. Jody Lundgren has been my guest. And Jody, I'm going to come see All Done, and then we're going to come back and talk about it on the show. But I want to walk through the halls first, before we have that conversation. Yeah. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, great. Thank you for having me. Take care.
That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. From Steve Zwemke, Crystal Schoenbauer, and Josh Heyer, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.